This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book title, Return, Dreaming and the Psycho-Spiritual Journey. And joining me from near Tucson, Arizona, is author Carol D. Warner, MA and MSW. Welcome to the program, Carol.
Thank you very much, Jay.
This is an extensive book, over 300 pages. There must have been something in your past. This is talking about psycho-spiritual journey. Something in your past that motivated you to write a book of this intensity and depth. Share a little of your background and your history and why this book got written.
Okay. It is a long story. First of all, this book is the dreams are the star of this book. Dreams in every aspect of our lives. Dreams as guidance, dreams as giving us wisdom, dreams as helping us solve problems, dreams as communications. It's been my love and passion working with dreams throughout my adult life. I've been involved with the International Association for the Study of Dreams for over 30 years, a wonderful organization devoted to study of all aspects of dreams. So I began this book many years ago in the 1990s. I'm a psychotherapist in private practice. I worked in Washington, D.C. for many years. That's where I was born, in that area. And then in the later 2008, I moved to Tucson and started up a practice here. I began the book in the 90s. I wanted to write a book on both psychological and spiritual aspects of the healing journey, one that focused on the abundant wisdom our dreams provide to us. As a psychotherapist, I do a lot of longer-term work with people, especially people who are in trauma recovery. And so I know there's a lot of interest out there as to, you know, what do our dreams mean? You know, what happens in therapy? How can dreams help us? How can I even remember my dreams?
Right.
So I wanted to address a lot of these issues in way that would engage, you know, a lay person or a clinical person, either way, anybody who is interested in the power of dreams, anybody who's interested in spiritual aspects of the healing journey, as well as the psychological. The MA, which you mentioned I have, it was a graduate degree in religious studies from the University of Virginia. And my MSW was from Smith College. So I combine the spirituality and dreams and psychology in my practice, so that the psychology and religion are often integrated for people. Many therapists won't touch the spirituality piece and don't know how to work with dreams. So that was the start of this book. Some people may remember the false memory controversy that came up in the 1990s.
Yes.
And the epidemic of satanic ritual abuse and many, many tough issues came up to the forefront. And there's really not been a whole lot of follow-up in the popular press. People don't know what to make of what happened. I wanted to also write about these tough issues from a grounded perspective to help people navigate through these troubled waters. And since my expertise was in dreams and I believed I had a lot to add to the literature, since most clinicians don't have much understanding of dreams, especially if they relate to memory and trauma.
Did you personally experience trauma or maybe events in your earlier life, either as a child or as a young adult, that motivated you to involve yourself in this direction?
That's a good question. I think that, I've had powerful dreams my whole life, but very, very early on, when I was just starting to record my dreams, I was 22, and I rode my bicycle to my job every day. And since I was in D.C., I rode back on the W&D Canal, beautiful bike path. And I had a dream that had a very dark, dark cloud over the bike path where I rode. And I was commanded in the dream, or I was told in the dream by that probably authoritative voice of God, I call it, that do not, it's dangerous. This dark cloud was over where I rode and said, don't ride your bike. So I woke up and I'm like, well, what's that about, right?
Right.
But on the other hand, I was like, that was a pretty powerful dream. I don't know what it means, but maybe I should find another way to get to work for a while. And so I honored the dream, and it was very inconvenient for me. But 3 days later, so for 3 days, I found another way to get there. 3 days later, I had another dream, and the same spot on the bike path. Now the sun was shining, the dark cloud was gone, and it said I could resume riding. So I thought, what's that about? So I went to the breakfast table where there was a copy of the Washington Post, and I started reading in it, and I saw an article about a woman who had been killed, murdered right in that area.
Wow.
The day before. And it was by, they caught the killer. He was a known serial killer, and he had been wanted for many years. So that was a really powerful beginning for me to my experience of dreams.
That would motivate you for sure.
Yeah, big motivation, right? Save my life. And as I discussed later on in the book, my dreams have saved my life on more than a few occasions. They've saved my life, my hide, my health, so many things. They're just these gems that we're given every night if we can remember them and write them down. And once we unlock them, they're so beautiful.
Is that how we actually can access maybe and do interpretation of the dreams we have? I have dreams all the time, and some of them are strange. I try to share some of them with my spouse, and she just scratches her head and says, well, you know, you need to stop eating something, I don't know, spaghetti before you go to bed or something. But you feel that there's actually something in the psyche that actually is there to assist us in our life choices, perhaps.
Oh, absolutely. And the main focus of the book is helping people to understand that, using tons and tons of examples from clients, from my own life, from other people, just how they can help in every area of their life, and beginning how to look at them, And also, what is ethical dream work? That's a real big issue, because both the questions of ethical therapy and ethical dream work come up a lot, since the false memory controversy. And there are absolutely strong guidelines for how to do the work, whether in therapy or whether it's an armchair dream interpreter, how to do the work so that you're not, you're not causing any harm.
And you've covered that in section,
somebody else.
You've covered that in section five, I believe. It's titled Mind Control and Surveillance Issues. One interesting fact also about you is your family history. Your father was involved in an aspect of government that is fascinating to read about. Do you think that may have also had some influence on your choices?
It had a great deal. My father, actually, after being in World War II as a bomber pilot, what was then called the Army Air Corps, assigned him to OSS, which was the precursor to the CIA. He had been very interested in the resistance workers in France that were OSS agents. And And so he was very interested. He wrote the CIA charter and stayed in the CIA through the 1970s when he was general counsel. And at that time is when the, I call them the mind control hearings, but it was the Senate Intelligence hearings about some things that had come to light about MK Ultra program. And he told me what he could about it. I knew it was very serious. I knew he was pretty horrified about what he learned, because as a lawyer in the CIA, you're compartmentalized from what they really do,
right,
unless you have a need to know. That is, a lawsuit comes forward, which it did, about some people who had been used in the mind control program. So, you know, he told me what he could about it. I always knew it was conspiracy fact, not conspiracy theory. So I didn't have to wade through years of wondering what went on. But I went a different direction. My father was an Air Force general, and he was general counsel in the CIA. I went a total different way, from military and intelligence into psychology and religion, or so I thought. And this is the immediate reason for putting the book out now. I had been working over the years with gradually more and more challenging clients, many with multiple personality disorder, which is now called dissociative identity disorder. And I realized after years of working with them and years of postgraduate training that a lot of the people with multiple personality that I was seeing were also mind controlled.
Wow.
And at one point, because my skills kept getting sharper, I guess I attracted higher level people, and I ended up working with a presidential level mind control client in Washington who had been used her entire life from a very young child as a sex slave, spy, courier, assassin, et cetera, as a Manchurian candidate.
Incredible.
Basically, we're talking about Manchurian candidate with their mind split through trauma-based mind control and horrible ritual abuse and used sexually from a young child. At any rate, she was very high up there, been used by any number of presidents and heads of state, and she was still very carefully monitored, even though she was not used anymore. She was handled and raped often by her handler to keep her dissociated. That I'm not going to go any deeper into this other than to say that there were many, many horrors. And as a result of her telling me many secrets, I guess she, an illegal set of acts, surveillance and stalking actions got set in motion against me.
Wow.
And maybe because of my dad, they thought I was more of a threat, because these were the programs that he had to defend and had great distaste for in the 70s. And now here I was, having gone the other direction in my career, and I was dealing with them as well. The same programs, the MK Ultra, in the mind control, the unbelievable mind control. So I wrote Section 5 to help myself, because my life was threatened and there were a number of attempts on my life. And the good news is that God wanted me to be alive and guided me through every situation. And I don't need to get into the details of any of them here. It's kind of like a mystery story, though, and in the book. A wise friend told me that in order to be safe, I would need to get the book out and get the information out. I want people to know that the surveillance stayed and is not denying that these things, these TVs and phones and computers, you know, that spy on us, they can be used against us and are. If there's a threat, people think that you're going to be a whistleblower or you have too much information. People need to wake up. People think, well, if I didn't do anything wrong, I don't need to worry about it. But nothing could be further from the truth. It's not like that. You know, all this information and data is stored on us forever, and anything can be distorted. Or what if you have an unpopular opinion, you know, about somebody, or what if you just really know information, you know, like I did. I'm a therapist. I wasn't a whistleblower. That was not my intention. I keep secrets. I'm really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
I had no intention of going public with the very, very potentially damaging information that I had. But, you know, I was kind of forced in a position where I had to. So there's a lot of information for the reader just about the surveillance state, about the history of mind control in our country. What is a Manchurian candidate? How are they created? How are they used? And, you know, I just want to warn people of the powerful dark agendas and the role of the surveillance state in furthering these dark agendas.
And your book deals with more than just the conspiracy area of psychotherapy and psychoanalysis and conspiracy, if you want to call it that, of theories. You also deal with healing. You also deal with the positive aspects of the memory and of dreams. Those are also a major part of your book.
Yes, the dark part is just a section. It's just a few chapters. It's a very powerful section. The healing power of dreams, the positive power of dreams, is the main thrust of the book. I look at all aspects of the human journey. I have a story in the end, very feel good after the dark stuff, which isn't conspiracy, which is actually,
sure,
you know, my actual mind control and what it looks like. I go into a positive section. When I talk about miraculous healing power of dreams, I have a story about a young woman client with terminal advanced ovarian cancer that had been diagnosed by two OBGYNs and two biopsies, and who was given just a few months to live. And this was after a lifetime of sexual and physical abuse. Mm. And it was just really, really heartbreaking, you know, when she came in and she told me about this diagnosis. And I went home and I prayed for her and her mother, because I had worked with her mother. And in the dream, Mary came down from the sky. You know, I was raised a Methodist. There's no Mary in Methodism,
right,
but in Catholicism, Mary's a very big role. And my client was Catholic. And anyway, she comes down from the sky and she's so beautiful and so ethereal and all these blue and gold clothes and energy. She puts her palms out, and from them issues three globes of light. And in the dream, I know that they're circling the three visible spots of ovarian cancer and healing her. And I woke up and, you know, I thought, oh my gosh, I just witnessed a visitation of my Mary healing my client. And then thought, oh, that couldn't happen. But the long and the short of that is that it did happen. And the OBGYNs couldn't believe it. The woman now 20 years later is cancer free.
Incredible.
And the cancer had spontaneously remitted with the dream, which is really, I mean, it's just a really beautiful, beautiful story. And there's some other beautiful stories, you know, at the end of the book and throughout the book on dreams. So I don't want people to feel that you're going to get bogged down in darkness. But it's kind of like, if you want to know the divine, you also got to understand the dark side and what you're fighting against. So that's kind of my theory about it. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And we do,
yes.
But dreams are a powerful tool for dealing with life, with dealing with illness, dealing with seeking guidance. And even you, Jay, your crazy dreams probably mean quite a bit.
I probably do. I need to change my diet. I think it's part of it. You have spent a lot of time and research, and certainly have shared your family history in this book. This book, describe the reader that you think, if you were to meet them on the street, how would you introduce your book and get them interested?
Well, I would talk about the amazing power of dreams. in our life journey, and the many engaging examples of how dreams can help people, and how dreams have helped people, and how dreams can even serve as, I have some funny family stories where there were dreams from people who were deceased, dreams about people who were deceased, bringing some information into to the dreamers. Very, very funny stories. So I would, and how to work with dreams, how to understand them, how to use them for your best information. So there's that, and just lots of great examples. A client told me, she said she's reading it, she says she can't put it down, that she never reads and she can't put it down. It really is a lot of engaging information. I would also say, you know, the Section 5 on the surveillance state is a wake-up call for everyone, and, you know, how it can be and is abused against innocent individuals. We just need to know these things. You know, we vote, but we need to know what we're voting for and what are these people we vote in are doing.
Well, thank you for sharing your story. This, again, is a book that I guess would be approached as an easy read. It's not deep research and a lot of reference points where they have to go back and check the original source. This is from your life experience and from your personal journey. You have shared this, and again, the title is Return, Dreaming, and the Psycho-Spiritual Journey. My guest author, Carol D. Warner. Carol, my listeners will want to get a copy of this. How do they do so?
So you can go to lulu.com and get either the ebook or the paperback. Also, it's available on Amazon, and soon will be, if it's not already, on Barnes & Noble.
Excellent. They also can request it from their local bookseller just by the name Return, Dreaming, and the Psycho-Spiritual Journey, which is kind of the subtitle, or by the author, Carol D. Warner, W-A-R-N-E-R. Carol, thank you for joining me today, and I'm certain with your wealth of experience and knowledge, there may be another book in the future. So we hope to visit with you again.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it, Jay.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
Listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Have you heard? The pages of American Patchwork and Quilting magazine come to life on our new weekly online radio show, American Patchwork and Quilting. Join Pat Sloan, our blogging and quilt designer host, as she talks about the latest trends, ideas, and inspirations. Her guests include quilt pattern designers, authors, quilt shop owners, and our editors. All quilters, just like you. Call in with your questions. Get quilting tips from industry experts. Learn about free patterns. Hear behind-the-scenes stories from our magazines, American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilt Sampler, and Quilts and More. Get the scoop on free stuff. And find out more about the best independent quilt shops in North America. To listen to a live show, tune in Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Just log on to allpeoplequilt.com/radio. To hear past shows, go to iTunes and search for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We hope you'll join us because we know that quilting changes everything.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Today we have a very interesting topic that has something to do with college, Bermuda shorts, and maybe even underwear. I don't know why that all fits in, but it's part of the package of a wonderful and entertaining series of stories included in the beautifully illustrated collection, Molly McDougal, Montgomery McGrath, and Other Stories to Make You Laugh. Joining me from I think it's Baltimore, Maryland, is our author.
That's correct, Jay.
George Cooper. Thanks, George, for joining me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
What's the significance of underwear? Well, we know the significance of underwear in some people's worlds, but in yours it had a particular significance related to this book, this novel, this series of stories you wrote.
Well, not so much underwear, but Bermuda shorts. I wrote in response to my mother gave my brother and I, who's 4 years younger than me, a pair of matching Madras beach shirts with no collar and white piping. And she told us to walk around the neighborhood and show all the neighbors our new outfits.
All right.
And I wasn't very enthusiastic about it, and she let me know it. So that was the basis of Bermuda shorts. And it's funny, when my mother read the story that I wrote many years later, she said, this is about those Bermuda shorts, isn't it? And I didn't say anything. I didn't want to hurt her feelings, but she knew what the story was.
Sure. Did you always have, I will say, an obtuse or a unique outlook on life? This obviously is a part of your package, maybe.
I like to think so. I think that life without humor is rather difficult, so I try to find humor in as many situations as I can, and usually I'm able to do it. Every once in a while I can't, but I find it makes life more livable.
Well, the foundation of your book and the idea to write this I'll call it a novel, it's really kind of a series of short stories.
It's a series of short stories, right?
Right. It really started in college. In college, you were involved in media also. How did that lay a foundation for you?
Well, I ended up in the optical business, so that I guess that'll give you an indication of how well the major worked out for me. But it was something I enjoyed, and I did write a few things in college that the other students seemed to appreciate it, and Molly McDougall was one of those things that I wrote, and I put the story in a dresser drawer. And many, many years later, I happened to notice it, and I thought, oh, this is pretty good, but it really needs some editing. So I decided to edit it and see if I could make it come out all right. And the editing seemed to make the difference between something written by a 20-year-old and something written by a 45-year-old is, I guess, just like anything in life, quite different.
Different perspective,
but,
obviously.
But I had fun with it and decided to see where it would go.
Are you still in? You're not in media. I thought by reading your notes that you were retired. Are you retired or are you?
I am retired.
You are retired.
I am retired, and that's part of my code for enjoying your life is to retire, no matter what the age, whether you're 7 or 8 years old and you've had enough of grammar school or. You're closing in on 70 like me, and you just want to take life easy. Retirement is the key.
I guess the significance of your story is that if you have a desire to be an author, to write, or whatever your passion is in life, don't give up on it and keep those stories sitting around. Maybe it'll come into importance later in life.
Yes, it has been fun. Just writing the stories, you know, keeps me off the street, keeps me from falling in with the wrong crowd, and I find relaxing and very enjoyable at the same time.
It's over 102 pages, and to describe it for our listeners, the illustrations are spectacular. Who is your target audience with this series of novels, or series of stories, I'm sorry?
Well, I would say the real target audience is 7 to 9, but children at a younger age enjoy the artwork, even if they don't always get the stories. And I guess starting at about 4, they seem to start to understand the stories. But sometimes 4 and younger, they really don't understand it, but they can still enjoy the artwork. But I would say if there's a real age that I had in mind is probably 7 to 9.
And you have written in poetry, I would call it, I guess. How in the world did that happen? You have obviously some skills that were not evident in your earlier career.
Well, yes, I did write it in verse, and it's just something I feel comfortable in, and I think that the language of verse is kind of easy on the ears, especially for children, and they're drawn to it. So since I felt comfortable writing in verse, I thought, well, we might as well give it a shot and see how it goes. And I've gotten a good response from I've gotten a good response in general, but the children in particular seem to enjoy the verse.
Any children or grandchildren stimulate your desire to get this published?
Yes, my granddaughter came along, and and I started to think about the book again. She's 15 now, so she's a little bit older. But she was kind of my motivation to get the process rolling again, to see if I could do something with my stories.
Is your main character Molly McDougal Montgomery McGrath in all of these stories?
No, she's just in the one story about refusing to take a bath. There are four very different stories. Let's see, there's Molly McDougal, Bermuda Shorts, about a young man who gets a present he's not particularly fond of. Then there's one about keeping secrets. And the last one is about Fedora Flats, which is completely and utterly whimsical.
Mm. Keeping secrets, has that anything to do with, was there a frog involved in one of your stories? Or am I thinking of something
else?
Yes,
that was the frog, yes. When a big blue frog swallowed my brother, I did not tell my father or mother. I thought they would like to know, but I knew that they would worry, so.
Oh. Beautiful.
I did not scream. I did not shout. I asked the frog to spit him out. So
that's beautiful. Beautiful verse.
Be careful about asking me to quote something.
I guess. Any books of Dr. Seuss lying around, maybe in your attic, that might have inspired you?
It's funny. I tried to not be too Dr. Seussy, but obviously I didn't. I didn't escape that. But I guess there are worse people to be compared to.
Oh,
you want to have your own voice, but Dr. Seuss is pretty darn good too.
Absolutely,
so
beautiful.
I'll take that.
Absolutely, the 102 pages must have taken a while. George, did you concentrate on this after retirement? How long did it take to get this edited and ready for print?
You know, I always take a writing course. And I would periodically write children's stories, and it took about 5 years before I felt like I had enough children's stories to make a complete book. And that was when I went to Balboa Press to do the artwork. I had hoped to entice a friend to maybe do the artwork for me and split the profits, but it would have been quite a commitment, and I couldn't find anybody. I have plenty of friends who should be committed, but nobody wanted to commit to this project. So,
well, the illustrations are spectacular.
I was really pleased. I was really pleased.
Was that any complicated issue, or were they just able to just embrace the stories and run with it?
I guess they were. As a matter of fact, I was so pleased that I tried to call Balboa Press and talk directly to the person who did the artwork, but that's a no-no. So I just said, just left a message, just, tell him or her that I was very pleased.
It is very well done. The colors are great, and, of course, the characters are just amazing. And it ties in so beautifully with your stories. Was there any underlying message other than the fact that you wanted to have fun and make people laugh when you shared these stories?
Not really. If I inadvertently came up with any serious messages, I apologize. I wanted chuckles more than anything else.
Well, you've achieved it. And are there more stories in the pipeline? Are you going to release an additional follow-up book to this?
Well, if this does reasonably well, or at least well enough for me to get my investment back and maybe a few dollars more, there definitely will be a second book. I have four other stories that are that are in need of illustration, and so we'll just see how it goes.
Well, it's visually impressive and beautifully done. The stories are a lot of fun. I think children of any age, including old ones like me, would find this a great addition to their library. The title of the book, again, is Molly McDougal, Montgomery McGrath, and Other Stories to Make You Laugh. Our author, George Cooper. George, I need to get this in the hands of my listeners. How do they get a hold of it?
You know, I've got 16 books left, and I can't find one of them when I look for them, but here we go. I did find it. It's through Balboa Press, available at www.balboa.com.
Super. They can also do a search online under your name, George Cooper, just as it sounds.
That's right.
Amazon Press probably will carry this and several other locations. Their local bookseller can order it in by the author's name, George Cooper, and also by the title, Molly McDougal Montgomery McGrath. That's a mouthful. Beautifully done. Best of luck with this in the future, and if things go well, I would love to visit with you again and share the follow-up book. I have a feeling is going to be coming out in the near future. Thanks for joining me today, George.
Well, I hope so, Jay, and thank you, Jay.
Pleasure visiting with you. For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
It's the Fitness Minute with fitness expert Annette Hammond.
When your focus is to lose weight or maintain your present weight, exercising effectively to burn the most calories is crucial. You want to give yourself every advantage to burn as many calories as possible. One good tip is to do your strength training exercises standing up so you can keep your heart rate up. Another tip is to perform multi-joint exercises when you can. For example, as you're doing a forward lunge, add bicep curls while you're coming up from the lunge. Another example is to execute a wide squat, and as you're coming up from the squat, perform a shoulder press. By doing these multi-joint exercises, you're putting more demands on your body, keeping your heart rate up, and working more muscles at the same time. The goal is to burn the most calories during that workout. I'm Annette Hammond. To hear other fitness and weight loss tips, visit our website at AnnetteHammond.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host.
The title of the book, Stories in Your Hands. Discover your authentic destiny using palmistry and tarot. And the author is Cynthia Clark. And Cynthia joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. And this interview is brought to you by Archway Publishing. Hello, Cynthia.
Hello.
Great to have you with us. And this is going to be a very fascinating discussion about our hands and also how it's tied to tarot. Two ancient and accurate tools, as you say, to guide readers and deep understanding of their true selves. Your book is a guidebook.
Yes, the book is actually a personality profiling book. So it helps you understand who you are from a subconscious level. Your hands actually form their shape by the time you are about 6 years old. So you can think about by the time you're born to the time you're 6 years old, you're completely in your subconscious mind, and you're being formed. You know, you're like a piece of clay, okay, so to speak. You're just absorbing everything around you. And that absorption will reflect through your hands. So by the time you are about 6 years old, your hands will be set, okay? And this setting creates a set of personality traits that will affect you for the rest of your life.
And you call these personality traits archetypes.
Carl Jung was the first psychologist really famous for talking about these unconscious influences and talking about these archetypes. I've come through with a different spin to help people understand it through the hands, and they happen to correspond with the tarot cards, which are a set of cards that actually represent the soul's journey through life. And they're called the major arcana, and what they do is they They take you from the Fool's Journey, that's the first card, all the way through to the World, which is the last card. And each one of those is actually symbolic of these personality traits. Yeah, these traits tie right in with your hands.
Now, this is your personal journey as well. This ancient science,
yes,
really changed your life.
My career was at a crossroads. A lot of people, especially now, go through many different career changes. They say the average now is 7 career changes in your lifetime, which is quite a bit more than what we used to have. So, you know, I was in my 30s, and I had run a restaurant. I was in the restaurant industry for many, many years, and it was just time to do something different. And it's not that I was, you know, unsuccessful or whatever. I was actually very successful in my restaurant business, but it was just time to do something else. You know, you get burned out, you get tired of doing the same thing all the time. You know, anyone who out there who's run a restaurant knows what I'm talking about.
Right.
It's a lot of work, and eventually you do get burned out unless you can, you know, lessen your hours. I mean, I used to put in about 100 hours a week. Which is, you know, basically you're living your restaurant and that's it. So when you think about a life in balance, I wasn't too balanced. So in that way, I guess you could say I was self-destructing. So I had just decided to, you know, let it all go and start fresh. Had no idea what I was going to do with the rest of my life. I'm still pretty young at this point. And obviously, you know, in my working years, and that's when I found hand analysis and palmistry. And I come from a very logical business background. I have a degree in business, actually. So, you know, I didn't come from the angle of, you know, a gypsy fortune teller, so to speak. I came from the rational, you know, business perspective, the analytical perspective, and I really didn't know anything about it. And when I read this book on palmistry, I just had a really profound deja vu experience where I felt not only that I had studied it before, but that I had studied it in other lifetimes before. And it was very, I mean, the feeling, if you've ever had deja vu, it's very strange. So I ended up studying, you know, again, even though it was my first time studying it. And I just picked it up really easily, really quickly. It was just so natural to me. And it was sort of like a light bulb going on in my brain. It's like, oh, here it is, click. You know, turn the light on. It was so interesting. So that's how I got into palm reading.
And through that, you got into a new career?
Yes. I ended up studying for about a year, reading as many people as I could find. And I had lots of acquaintances and lots of volunteers. It was very nice because you do have to get in your practice. And I decided to go full-time after about a year. And that's what I've been doing ever since. So I've worked with about 7,000 people now.
So this is as you write about it, it's a like a mirror. When you look at your hand, like I'm looking at the palm of my hand and I see a bunch of lines, it's a mirror of who I am. And in fact, you even say it reflects your true desires, your purpose, and even your values. You can read that.
Yes. You can. Your hands are just an extension of your brain, and the lines in the hand will mimic the neural pathways in your brain, and they ebb and flow. They change over time. You can see stress. You can see how you think, how you feel. You can see, you know, preferences, relationship compatibilities and preferences. I mean, all kinds of stuff, your willpower, how you see yourself, how you present yourself. You know, it's just such a detailed map of who you are. And I think people discount it a little bit, and that is unfortunate, and I'd like to switch that around for, you know, people's, just to, you know, it's not what most people think, in that, you know, you're, like, how long you're going to live, for example, is not in your hands. So if anybody tells you, oh, I have a short lifeline, I'm going to die at, you know, young age, that's not accurate. Your lines change, okay? So your hands are reflecting your vitality, your stability, you know, and yes, the future is in the hands, but it's not set. You know, you can change your pathway. You do have free will to change your pathway. And I've seen all kinds of stuff of watching people's hands over years of time and tracking the changes. But, you know, it's good to understand the base, which is the personality archetypes, and the soul imprint, and how that overlays into your everyday existence. It's so, I mean, it's such a useful tool for people. And I think if everybody would study it, they would be not only happier, but they would be more in their authentic self, which is what I try to teach people. It's like if you are, you know, being what your hands are saying makes you happy, then why wouldn't you want to do that? Why wouldn't you want to know what that's saying? You know, so I try to help unlock people's potential. That's ultimately what I do.
And in your book, you have photos of hands and the same hands at a different time, and you can see from the photos how those lines change.
Yes, they definitely can. And so, you know, I really do enjoy the time lapse, working with people over years of time. It's so much fun to, you know, take an ink print and see where you're at, you know, because it's basically a snapshot when you do an ink print of where you are today. And then we can start to track it. So you come back to me 6 months later or whatever, and we can do another print, and we can actually see what's going on and how things are evolving. And, you know, the right hand and left hand also tell a little bit of a different story. So you look at the passive hand to show some potentials that maybe want to come out, but they're maybe not developed yet or not ready yet, or, you know, it could just be an optional thing for you. I like to show people the differences on the two hands as well.
So the lines, whether they're horizontal predominantly or along with vertical lines, that all means something.
Absolutely. Yeah, the lines are actually the most complicated part of palm reading, and it gets a little bit confusing. But, you know, if with a trained expert like myself, I can help you navigate through the whole thing.
And also also the way your fingers, whether they're straight or bent, or that means something.
Absolutely. Most people do not have all straight fingers. So when a finger starts to bend, that is actually a type of stress. And depending upon what finger it is, what is the stress relating to? So if you look at, I would say the number one bend on people's hands is their middle finger, and it tends to bend towards their ring finger. That's the most common bend that I've noticed. And of course, the middle finger relates to your attitudes towards work and duties and responsibilities. So, you know, and when we look at our society, we're all stressed out about that stuff, you know. So it's showing a worry and a stress over, like, your everyday decision making. And, you know, it's really interesting how, you know, people with money problems, people with, you know, they're just, like, getting by. You know, in their day-to-day life, it's like, well, that middle finger is going to show that stress.
And how does the reading of palms, palmistry, then relate to the use of cards?
So this is where I have made a connection that I'm pretty sure no one else has made in the palmistry world. Tarot is, like I said, it's the soul's journey. There's 78 cards, actually, 22 are called the major arcana, and the remaining 56 are called the minor arcana, which is big secrets and little secrets. And it's the number one divination tool in the world. People will, they will read tarot cards in order to not only predict the future, but also for any, basically any question, you can ask the cards and you can get answers to things. But, you know, where I've made the connection is through the major arcana cards, the 22 big secrets cards. And each one of those corresponds to a personality archetype, which corresponds to your hands. So you can actually identify not only who you are through the cards, but you can also, and everybody has between one and three of these archetypes. And so it helps give you a whole new way of looking at yourself and understanding yourself, you know, just like astrology does, just like numerology does, just like Myers-Briggs does, you know, if you want to go the psychology route. All of these tools are diagnostics to understand yourself better. And this is just another tool that you can use to really gain understanding. And it can help you to find balance. It can help you to understand other people. It can help you understand your relationships, your compatibilities, your preferences, and just how to be in harmony with that energy. So it's a very useful tool for people.
We've been talking with Cynthia Clark. She is the author of her book, Stories in Your Hands. What is the best way, Cynthia, to get your book?
Well, you can definitely go to my website, worldofhands.com or storiesinyourhands.com. And you can access it that way. You can also get it through Archway Publishing. You can get it through Amazon. It's available in hardcover, softcover, ebook formats. You can go to Barnes & Noble. I mean, it's out there. It's really easy to find.
Thank you so much, Cynthia, for joining us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And this interview has been brought to you by Archway Publishing.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing. Join us again next week at noon Eastern.